John Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Well, it's a Friday, and that's what happens on Fridays. Mayor Michael Bloomberg shows up at 8 o'clock. Good morning, sir.
Well, last weekend started the rain. This weekend, no.
And I've noticed you've been looking at your iPad there and the weather.
Checking the weather. Yankee game tomorrow night. Sweep would be nice. And Tampa Bay is down to zip two.
Well, you know, it's all going to come down to the finals here, the playoffs, and the Yankees sure got the Twins number.
You know, I'm sort of trying to figure out where the parade should start.
Don't get ahead of yourself.
We have to plan. No, all kidding aside, it was great. Funny thing is, first game, two nights ago, at the beginning, it just didn't look like they were. And you never count the Yankees out.
No, in fact, at the end of the season, a lot of people are going, what's going on here, when they weren't winning and ended up as a wild card, but maybe they're just holding it in reserve.
Well, you can't, or you can't win them all.
That's true. Let's see here, where should we start?
Okay, as the King said in Wizard of Oz, why don't you start at the beginning, and stop when you get to the end.
Okay, we'll do that. The tunnel across the river, big story this morning. Christie pulls the plug on it.
I would much prefer that we had the tunnel because it would bring a lot of people into New York City that we need for business and to work and vacation, whatever. But this is a Port Authority project. Remember, the city does not have any votes on the Port Authority board. The Port Authority is an organization created between the state of New York and the state of New Jersey. In fact, I've always thought it should be between the city of New York and the state of New Jersey, although, because all of the Port Authority New York side of the river projects are in the city. The trouble with that, of course, is that we wouldn't get any state money. So, you know, don't ask for something you want. Don't
exactly.
Want, you might get it. But the truth of the matter is they're the ones that have got to build it. And the taxpayers in New Jersey would be on the hook if there were overruns, because the Port Authority says they can't afford to cover them. They don't have the money. They got a lot of projects going. And Christie made a decision and said that, because too many times in the past they've gone way over budget, they can't afford to do it again. Whether it's the right decision or not, I wish he had found a ways to go in the other direction.
That was my kind of question.
Well, yeah, but on the other hand, this guy's responsible for balancing the budget. People in Jersey put him in because his predecessors couldn't balance the budget, and that's what they want. Now, are you making a good short-term decision for a bad long-term decision? That's one way to phrase it. The other way to phrase it is there is a good long-term decision, but you just don't have the wherewithal to do it, and you can't get blood out of a stone. I'm not going to second-guess Christie. I'm sympathetic. He's got to make the tough decisions. That's what he was hired for. I wish he had found a ways to do that, because it would be good for New York. It'd also be good for New Jersey.
The whole nation, though, too, really. I mean, because
well,
this is a long-term...
Federal government put in some money. If you believe the whole nation, let the federal government put in more.
Well, that's what I was talking about earlier this morning, obviously. And Ray LaHood is coming in to meet with the governor. Maybe he's got something. Who knows?
Maybe it really would make a difference. But once again, Christie's job is to protect the citizens of New Jersey and not to get them in a situation where they are obligated to spend money they don't have. If you take a look, Second Avenue Subway, way, way over budget. Go to Boston, the Big Dig, way, way over budget. 7th Avenue Extension, on budget, on time. And if it went over at this point, it'll go over such a small amount, it would not be that big a deal. But hopefully it'll come in
well,
right on.
Well, let me ask you a silly question here. What are you, the city, doing differently on the 7 than they're doing on the 2?
Well, it's easy to... I can tell you how to raise your kids. My kids are more difficult. So that's a hard question to answer. We're lucky with the 7 line because it's all tunneled, no trenching. That means you don't have to worry about moving all the infrastructure. Sometimes you get big surprises when you do that. It's run by the MTA, incidentally. We fund it. But the MTA is doing the construction.
So on both.
On both. But let's give them credit. They are doing... I don't know why the Second Avenue line has been such a problem. Keep in mind, when it gets done, it's only going to go from 96th to 63rd. It is going to take an enormous amount of time, a number of years, a couple more years before it's done, and it's really hurting businesses along Second Avenue. Whether they could have done it any differently in hindsight, I don't know. Whether it was just one of these projects that, you know, is star-crossed from the beginning, because they remember they built that section up north and then sealed it up. It's gone on for years and years and years. I don't know. I just can tell you, 7th Avenue, number 7 line extension, not 7th Avenue, number 7 line extension, on budget, on time, and being built by the MTA. So when people criticize the MTA for everything they do, I'm not an expert on them. I can tell you this project, they're doing a great job, and the subways that I take every day work, and they work very well.
Well, that was the report out this week by the strap hangers. They even acknowledged that things are better than they've been in the past.
Right. I said I was with the governor yesterday on this full sugar drink thing, which we can talk about later, and I said there's a guy, Richard Dinks, his state health commissioner, and I said, I've always said that Jay Walner is the best appointment the governor's ever made. Actually, think his health commissioner would tie for one of the best. Those are two great appointments the governor's made, and hopefully Andrew wants and can keep him going on. I also think that the governor in appointing Chris Ward, who used to be one of my commissioners, made a good choice. I don't always agree with Chris, but he's tough and he's smart and he fights and, you know, eventually, and he listens. You got to work hard, but that's what a good leader is supposed to do.
All right, Mr. Mayor, why don't I take this opportunity to take a break here at 8:15. All right, we continue here 21 minutes after 8 o'clock. Before we get off the trains, MTA fare increases, no surprise.
No surprise. State doesn't give them any money, and we didn't have congestion pricing to generate money, and people that work for the MTA got to get paid.
So next case,
it's very simple, and we're not making the investments for the long term that we should be in terms of improving security and comfort and frequency and speed and reliability and all of those things. And it's sad because we could have. Now, hopefully, we will. You know, let's forget about the past.
They're working on Wi-Fi and cell service down below the stations and on the trains too. Is that a good idea?
In this day and age, everybody wants that. I mean, you know, yet I find it annoying if somebody's talking on a cell phone standing next to me, but I don't find it annoying when I'm talking on the cell phone standing next to
them. So what's your point?
Yeah, but, you know, in this day of Facebook and all the social networking stuff and emails, you know, it's part of people's lives, whether you like it or not. And not to have it, I guess, look, the way of the future is it will be every place. You can fight and say, I don't want that tide to come in, but come on. I was like up in Westchester. They fought forever against cell phone towers. You know, someday somebody's going to die because they couldn't get good cell service to call a doctor. And in this day and age, more and more people are taking out all their phones. My kids, I don't think either one. I know George doesn't have it. I don't know about Emma.
My kids don't
have a regular line. Just use cell phone.
Absolutely. Does the mayor have a Facebook page?
The mayor does. Does the mayor put things on it? No. But my staff
does. Do you tweet and stuff?
My staff tweets.
So you don't tweet?
No, I use phone and email. But, you know, that's a little bit different. I will say I find it, I was talking to a friend the other night, people that share these private things, and we were looking for, just pick the name at random, someone we both know, and I sent out 10 emails during the day. I'm going to the bank right now. You know, I think I'll have coffee. And you wonder, what on earth, why does anybody care? Why do people, why would
I
look at it? Number two, where do they get the time to do it? There's got to be other things in life to do it. And Mark Zuckerberg's done a heck of a job. I've never seen the movie about him. He's controversial. They claim, and friends of mine who really know say it's probably true, they have 500 million
Members, yeah, whatever they are.
It is staggering. There's only 6.5 billion people in the world.
And I'm not quite sure how they make money, but he makes billions of dollars.
Well, it's a man market cap. They'll find a ways to monetize it in one way or another. But just the thing that surprises me is why people want to tell others what they're doing day in and day out. I can say, hey, you know, we had a new baby, or, you know, I just got into college, or whatever the case may be. But the mundane, minutia stuff that goes, and some of these kids don't understand. They put pictures on and things on. Nothing you ever write gets erased totally. And, you know,
it's out there forever.
What I call the Richard Nixon lesson. You know, if you record it, someday it is going to come out.
We saw the tragedy over at Rutgers this past week.
Well, that was a disgrace.
Just horrible.
Yeah, it really was tragedy. But just, you know, someday some kids can apply for a job, and the companies in the state, look, why shouldn't you try to find out about your employee before you hire him, not afterwards? And, you know, kid put a picture of him or herself naked, or, you know, just with his tongue sticking out. You know, it just doesn't,
or worse.
But just the tongue sticking out. Can you imagine the interviewer that you're in front of? Do you really want them to see that picture?
Or holding the iPad and turning it around. Would you please explain what this was?
Right, yes.
showing you the picture. No, I don't think that's a good idea. All right, food stamps, sugary sodas, you and the Gov want to make it not happen.
There's a couple things here. Facts are 1 in 8 New Yorkers adults are overweight or obese. 40% of all children are overweight or obese. If you're overweight or obese as a child, the odds are overwhelmingly you will have a big weight problem when you're an adult, and that will lead to diabetes and some kinds of cancers. And there was an article I saw in the paper today about your earnings potential if you're thin or heavy.
Yeah, I saw that.
So that's the facts. Overweight, obesity, diabetes, number one health issues in this country that are growing. Everything else is going down, or worst case, stagnant. But we're making progress in all of the others. That's why life expectancy, for example, in New York City is 1 year and 7 months longer than it was 9 years ago. Just think about that. The average person is living over 1.5 years longer. Now, everybody makes jokes about, well, they can't afford the rent and that sort of thing, but regardless. So you have this problem, and you got to do something about it. The governor, who I thought was right, tax full sugar drinks. Why? You can drink, you can get, your palate can get used to low-calorie drinks very easily, and it's not the only thing, but for kids, a third of all of their calories come from this. So people say, well, what about taxing or banning X, Y, and Z? You know, maybe a good idea, but when you have one thing that stands out, and when there's an easy substitute for it, why not do it? In the case of food stamps is a program, a federal program, that was created to improve the nutrition of those who didn't have the money to do it on their own. The decision was made, I think it's a correct one, that society is better off, and it's a good use of society's money to help people who can't afford to eat well, to eat well. They will be healthier, they'll maybe go to school more, they'll become the next generation of doctors and rocket scientists and whatever, but it's a good public policy. And when the program was created, they said, well, we're not going to pay for cigarettes. That kills you. We're not going to pay for booze. We're not going to pay for a whole handful of things that were not nutritious. This is a program that's supposed to encourage nutrition. So why should food stamps pay for something we know is bad for you? And nobody's going to take away your right to buy full sugar drinks. You can do that, but you just shouldn't be able to use the government's money to do it. And people that shop with food stamps, they buy some things that food stamps pay for, and they buy some things that food stamps don't pay for. If you want to cook, a lot of people would use tinfoil, for example, or cover a plate or cook on it or whatever. Government doesn't. Food stamps don't pay for tinfoil. And yet most people that buy food buy tinfoil. So, you know, people are used to doing both. Here we're simply saying the government's money should not be used to buy full sugar drinks. The effect we think it'll have, just like when you raise taxes on cigarettes, kids don't have the money, so they buy a lot less cigarettes and smoke less.
Kids don't get food stamps, though, do they?
No, but their parents won't buy it, and then they won't they won't do it. So plain and simple, this is an issue, part of a larger agenda, of course, trying to make the public healthier. That is, no matter what these people write about Nannygate, that is one of the government's primary jobs. Not to and I don't happen to think we should tell you what you... We should ban you from hurting yourself. For example, if you want to smoke, I've always defended your right to smoke. You just shouldn't be allowed to smoke someplace where other people have to make a decision. Have my job or breathe bad air. Or other people have to make the decision, move on the beach or in the park, because those things, people complain all the time about other people smoking just upwind of them. This is plain and simple. Should the government's money be used to encourage a habit that leads to kids and adults? Yeah, yeah, the more and more people you see without legs, that's from diabetes. Mm. More and more people dying from some of this stuff, childhood diseases, cancers, obesity is not good.
Who runs this food stamp program? Where does it come out?
USDA.
USDA. So the USDA
has to give us the permission to, and all we're asking for, in New York City, for 2 years, to show whether it works or not, be able to prohibit you to use food stamps in New York City stores to buy full sugar drinks.
Now, as I understand it, Minnesota requested this some years ago.
Yeah, but they did, and it was part of a bigger thing. They wanted to ban Cheez-Its. Cheez-Its, one of my favorite foods.
Twinkies.
Well, no, I never ate Twinkies, but I love Cheez-Its. Not good for my waistline. But yeah, all kidding aside, it is... Minnesota's thing was different, and it's a different time. Today, there's an awful lot more science that tells you what the effect of being overweight is, and we have a lot more data in terms of how much of the calorie intake that kids have comes from full sugar drinks.
USDA giving you an indication?
No, we just sent in 2 days ago, but I already did get a letter from the head of one of the full sugar beverage companies.
They weren't happy. I don't understand.
That's a nice waste of phrase.
I don't understand why the beverage companies don't get rid of the sugar.
I would do it too. I've said that to the three big ones. If I were them, I would do that overnight, take all the credit. The kids are still, and adults are still going to drink.
You can't tell. I mean, after two or three, you can't tell the difference.
I drink Diet Coke and Diet Pepsi. It would never occur to me to drink a full sugar. There are roughly 10 teaspoons of sugar in a full sugar drink. You want to have a cup of coffee with 10 teaspoons of sugar or tea? You couldn't drink it.
No. All right, let's take a break here, Mr. Yes, do call that number that Bill Rock just told you about, 800-321-0710. A couple of lines open. The mayor's got some answers for you in just a few moments. This week, you and Ken Feinberg, I spoke with Ken Feinberg, were talking about the 9/11 Compensation Fund. For first responders, and it was obvious that the two of you were concerned that this whole thing could crater if they don't get the 95%.
Well, I don't know. Concerned is the right answer. What Ken pointed out was the last time 25% of the people the last day agreed to the Victims' Compensation Fund settlements. The issue here, for those that don't remember, after 9/11, a lot of people worked down on first a rescue, then recovery effort, breathed the bad air. No argument about that. A lot of them are coming down with cancers because of that. Medicine is, the science is rock solid. And the city has programs for people and programs particularly for police and fire who work down there. There are a lot of construction workers who work down there, and their companies are potentially liable. You don't want to put companies out of business because their workers got sick doing that, because next time if there's a disaster, they're just not going to send them
Nobody
in.
Sure.
Is it fundamentally, if you think about the Good Samaritan law and the purpose, that was the idea here. Federal government put billions of dollars in. Ken Feinberg came in. Victims Compensation Fund, it was called. He made a fair, what he thought was fair, and somebody has to decide what fair is, settlement with all of the people. This is later on. There's a bill before Congress to reopen the Victims Compensation Fund. Federal money. Feinberg would administer it, and I hope that bill passes. It's called the Zeroga bill, named after a guy.
It's in the Senate right now.
Right. The House, in all fairness, Pelosi and Boehner got enough Republicans, enough Democrats to pass it. Now it goes to the Senate. Gillibrand is the lead one and from New York working on it. She was Schumer. Hopefully they get it done and we'll try to do that. That's one thing. A separate thing is a settlement for a lawsuit. There's 10,000 people who work down there who, it's not a class action suit, but the judge combined all of their suits together. And we're trying to come up with a settlement so that the monies will be, they will get whatever, and Feinberg's anyway worked out what he thinks is fair. Now they've got to, the judge said, okay, if 95% of the people agree to the settlement, we'll do that. He will approve it. 95% is a high bar, but it's a bar you want to be high because you don't want to have these going on forever. So this would settle most of them. People have to decide whether to opt in. The deadline is November 8th. Feinberg is reasonably optimistic, I think, that we'll get 95%. If you don't get 95%, this 10,000 suits are going to be in the courts. You and I won't live long enough to see them. It'll be go on forever, be phenomenally expensive, use up an enormous amount of money in legal fees. You know, nobody suggests this is good because it would be better if nobody got sick. But given the real world of people having gotten sick and, you know, society only has a certain amount of money, this is probably the best anybody's ever going to see. Fair and reasonable are the words that I think we should apply to it. So we're trying to explain to people, if you settle and the Zadroga bill gets the Victims Compensation Fund reopened, and the Victims Compensation Fund gives you more than what you got in the settlement, you will get the difference. You don't get double dip, but you will get this, the settlement money, and anything more if it exists. And maybe it won't exist. Maybe the Zadroga bill won't get passed. The Victims Compensation Fund won't get reopened, and all you get is the settlement. If they don't agree, if 95% don't agree, they're not going to get anything, at least not for many, many years. So that's the issue.
All right. While we're at the World Trade Center, or at least discussing that, this week you announced that you're going to find a fair amount of money, $100 million for a theater, art center?
Well, we have money that Congress gave us that has to be spent downtown. We've used a lot of this with Con Ed and other companies to redo all the infrastructure, and those are the kinds of things it was designed for. There is money left, and what there's a lot of demand downtown for an art center because a lot of people get in the hotels. This helps business downtown, makes downtown more of an interesting place to live and all of that kind of stuff. The estimates are it would take $400 million to build an art center and have an endowment and all that sort of stuff. This is, I said, look, let's put $100 million out of this fund that we already have to spend downtown. Let's put it aside for an art center and spend the next year or two looking to see whether or not in the private sector we can raise the balance. I talked to John Whitehead last night, retired head of Goldman Sachs, and this is one of these guys that's done everything for New York City and on the World Trade Center Memorial Board. He started to raise the money there, and then John Rosenwald and Christy Ferrer and I took over and kept it going, and we both agreed it'd be very hard to raise the money in this economic climate, but maybe a year from now the world will be better, or our economy will be better. And maybe we can. If we can't, we're not spending this money unless we can raise.
Not pulling the trigger on building something.
No, absolutely not. But it's saying, okay, if you could raise $300 million, we'll put this $100 million in. And let's see whether we can raise more money. Today you can't.
The paid days off. We talked about it last week, and I know your position on this.
I think it's gotten worse now. All of a sudden, you know, somebody said, "Well, supposing you make all your money from tips and from tips if you're a waiter or a bartender." That's not fair if you have to take the time off because you won't get. How do we know how much you make? So, well, we'll force bars and restaurants to change their schedules so that you will get more time to work other hours, and then you can make that money. You know, all of a sudden, you're into trying to tell companies how to schedule their people. And incidentally, if these people have to go on to get more time behind the bar or in the restaurant, others aren't going to get in there. So people are going to get pushed out. Nobody stops to thinking. It's like a balloon. You push one side,
consequences.
It goes. This is just, you know, it really is. We keep doing these things without thinking. And New York City has created 10% of all of the private sector jobs in the country this year. It's created 100% net of all the private sector jobs in New York City this in New York State this year. To all of a sudden pass bills like this that are going to drive people out or get companies to stop hiring or get them to downsize. And people say, oh, no, they can afford it. They can afford it. There's an assemblywoman I was having dinner with, and she said, we can't afford these defined benefit plans. Nobody in the private sector has them. She says, oh, all those business people, they can do that. Those business people, that's your pension fund. That's your 401k. It's everybody's money, and there's this attitude, they can afford it. I don't care. You know, a wise person once said the whole idea of government was to take money from the wealthy and votes from the poor and convince both that you're the only thing protecting them from the other side. There is something to be said for that. This is just craziness, and hopefully everybody will see that, and hopefully I think when some of the city council people start realizing what they're going to do in their communities and those small businesses that are going to get hurt and the people that are going to get laid off, maybe they'll say, you know, this isn't quite the right time to do it. The economy is fragile, and we are doing better than the rest of the country, but you want to turn us around and get us off the top, this is a sure ways to do it.
Did I read correctly this morning that the Board of Elections put out a $6.5 million contract for a survey to see, or a PR campaign, in the wake of the primary debacle?
I think in all fairness to them, I don't know the answer. I was asked a question, I thought they did a poll, and it cost in the tens of thousands of dollars in my memory, I don't remember. And I said, you know, if that was the worst thing they did, I wouldn't have a big complaint. You'd still have something to talk about, but, you know, you'd say, wait a second. The real problem was that a lot of the polls didn't open on time. I have friends who went to the polls and said they didn't have any ballots for whatever party they were in. Or people said, oh, no, there's no primary for you. They weren't trained. Not some places worked, but you hear story after story. The real problem with the Board of Elections is, by state law, it is made up of only members of the Republican and Democratic Party, split down the middle. We're in this state, a third of the people are disenfranchised out of that because they're not registered in either party or in some of the smaller parties. They have no accountability. They complain all the time. And incidentally, we've got this big budget problem. They're going to get cut back. So I don't want to hear this, they can't do it with the amount of money they have. They're going to have to do it with less money. Our police department's going to have to do it with less money. Our fire department's going to have to do it with less money. We're all going to have to do it with less money. Everybody says, oh, you can't cut this. You can't cut me. You can't cut that. Yeah, well, the only way as you get through this is everybody shares the pain, and that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I've suggested that. Again, it's not your worry directly, but on the state level, whoever's the next governor should come in and do just that. Say, we're going to take 8 to 10% right off the top, everybody.
You said that, and in all fairness, Paladino said 20%.
Yeah.
Here's the dirty little secret, ain't up to the governor.
Well, I know, I understand that.
I mean, I love this.
It should go to the entity. It should go to the leadership.
Christie's done a good job of pushing and cajoling and forcing and trading, whatever, to get the legislature. Now, he's done some things that may not make some sense. He didn't fund the pension funds and that sort of thing. Here, I don't think you could get away with that. The law says you have to. I don't know what New Jersey law is, but, you know, Christie's trying to do something. In a democracy, there's a legislature, they have some say, and, you know, as I think Governor Christie would tell you, it is not easy, and whoever the next governor of New York is going to wake up day one and say, oops, I promised all this stuff, now, you know, how can I deliver? Some of it is against the law, some of it the courts are going to stop, and some of it just political will never get done. And by the way, the only thing left is I might be able to rename the state ice cream. And I'm not even sure they can do that. That's just the real world. The governor's job is not to dictate. The governor's job is to lead, convince, and find ways that, you know, featuring, you do a little bit here, I'll do this for you, you do this for me, trading to get legislators to pull together, move to the middle, and do pretty, not everything, but a lot of stuff for most people, and not hurt too much the extremes.
But as you know, as a businessman and as the mayor, as you have shown, you can go in, especially with a budget of $168 billion that never has had anything cut back. There's got to be 8 to 10% just lying there that could be removed.
Well, you see that in the Tea Party, which is not a party, it's a euphemism for the Perot boomlet of 16, 20 years ago, whenever it was, the McCain boomlet 10 years ago. The public is frustrated. They don't know why, but they know things aren't working. Now, they cast out, and sometimes they do stupid things, sometimes they do smart things, but the public is saying, hey, I want this to work. Now, and then when, if the governor, mayor, or president says, well, yeah, but, you know, it's so partisan, or we have a bad economy, or I asked them and they wouldn't, the answer is, hey, buddy, you wanted the job. You, when you were campaigning, you didn't tell me you wouldn't be able to do it. You told me you were going to do it. Do it. And I've always been annoyed. We put out this list of everything we promised during all three campaigns, and then we update it periodically. I think we're due for another update now. We're working on it. If you told the public during the campaign you were going to do it, do it. If you say, look, I tried, you, everybody sees I've been working with the legislature, I've tried, I just can't get them to do it. Okay, I understand that. That's the real world, and I'm sympathetic, and I'll give you a buy on that one. But if you don't even try to do it, or you do it in a half-hearted way, no, that's not what a good government is.
All right, Mr. Mayor, got a full back. Four before 9 o'clock, Mr. Mayor, let's get right to the telephones. We're going to start with John's going to be up first here. Hello, John. Good morning. John, you there?
Hello? Is this me?
That's you, I think, if your name is John.
My name is Joe.
All right, Joe, it's you. You've got the mayor's ear. Go.
Okay. Good morning. On the sugary drink issue, if your intent is to make the regulation conform with the original law that, you know, you're only going to provide food stamps for nutritious items, I agree with you 100%. But the way you spoke before, you said you asked for 2 years to find out if the program is going to work. I'm just wondering, what kind of data do you think you'll be able to analyze after 2 years to show if anything worked?
Okay. I thought the question was going to be is why not everything that's bad for you? And the practical reality is you've got to get things that work. And in this case, you have the full sugar drinks is such a big percentage of the kids' caloric intake. How do you measure it? All the supermarkets that take food stamps, it's all electronic on their cash registers. And you can find out, they can just say to the cash register, how many full sugar drinks came through on food stamps. So it's easy to measure. What we're not going to go do is measure people's weights. You know, walk down the street and say, kid, get on a scale and let's see if you've lost weight. But you could. But if you cut down the number of full sugar drinks that are bought, because you can tell which were bought with food stamps and which were bought out, then you know you're making a difference.
All right, let's go to Bart. Bart on line 5 here. Bart, you've got the mayor. Go.
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Hi.
Yes. My cousin has a business on Broadway and in the 140 area. And when he took the business several years ago, the top floor where he is, he paid half the taxes, and the two businesses on the bottom paid a quarter each. His tax roll was $20,000 a year. We got assessment, reassessment, and the taxes for the building went up to $180,000.
What's the question, Bart?
How could they go up from $40,000 to $180,000?
Well, it does sound like an awful lot, and I think you should check with your lawyer and have them call the city and see. Property values are going up in some parts of Manhattan because business is better. Property taxes keep going up even if property values stop going up, because in the past years there's a law that says you can't raise property taxes as fast as property values go up. That sounded like a good thing to everybody back then, but of course the other side of it is you're way behind, and so you start to catch up after property values start heading down. Property taxes are still going up, but that jump sounds like a very big jump. It may be that the building was incorrectly assessed at the beginning, unless you know the specifics of it, but it just sounds like a lot. If I were you, I'd call 311. They'll tell you where you go, or you can talk to your lawyer, your accountant. They'll know where to go.
Yeah, interesting with property taxes these days. One of the things is with values dropping down, property taxes so it should be going down, but unfortunately the costs stay the same, so they change the millage rate sometimes. I'm not saying
we haven't done that in the city, but right. Some of the villages are doing that. Exactly right. You know, the bottom line is there's no free lunch here, and if you said, well, people aren't going to pay the increase during the upside of the cycle, you get in trouble on the downside.
All right. Well, before we run out of time and get in trouble, Mr. Mayor, thank you very much. Have a good week.
Thank you. Thank you. You too. It's going to be great weather. Go Yankees.
Yeah, exactly so. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show. Thank you, everybody.